Welcome to Steppin' Out of Babylon, produced by Sue Supriano. Babylon is everywhere. It's the isms and schisms not only within the system, but within ourselves. Let's unify, stand aligned, and step out of Babylon.
My name's Sue Supriano, and I'm about to speak with Forrest Kuro, who with his wife, Anne, is the editor and founder of Streetlight. The subtitle is The Politics of Poverty, Homelessness, and the, quote, homeless industry, unquote. And that is in San Diego, California. So I want to welcome you, Forrest, and ask you, when did you start this newspaper and why?
Okay, this started after a group of us were arrested in San Diego during the Republican convention. As in a number of cities, when there was major events coming to town, the police were starting to round up homeless people, chase them out of town. Larry Mulligan and I convinced a group of them that that we should try staying together in near City Hall to make any arrests or intimidations a public matter instead of something happening in secret. And after we were arrested about a week into the convention for simply for sleeping.
Mm-hmm. Sleeping in the street.
Sleeping near City Hall as a protest. About 40 police showed up, gave everybody
Welcome to Steppin' Out of Babylon, produced by Sue Supriano. Babylon is everywhere. It's the isms and schisms.
10 minutes to leave. At one moment, there were about 75 homeless people, and 5 minutes later, there were about 5 activists. And our arrests really didn't make the media, didn't tell anybody anything significant. I looked at the examples of street spirit and real change, which I'd been thinking of for a while at that point anyway, and realized that if I was going to let the general public know what was really going on here, we would need to start a street newspaper, as in it was Oakland, Berkeley for street spirit, and real change was in Seattle. And we desperately needed something like that in San Diego. The phrase homeless industry, which you noticed on our cover, that's a quote from professional worker in a nonprofit charitable organization. And I think he was being half ironic, but I'm afraid it was only half ironic. There's too much of what charity does not necessarily involve compassion. Mm-hmm. There's a difference between pitying someone and keeping them at a distance, and actually understanding their humanity and their situation. our real theme is underdog politics, I would say. The stories that don't make the real media because the powers that be don't find them convenient, because the reality is more complex. One of my favorite sayings is just say no to oversimplification.
That's interesting. So is your newspaper Streetlights sold by homeless people on the street in the same way that Street Sheet is in this Bay Area? And I'd like to let people know that we're meeting here, Forrest Kuro and I, at the North American Street Newspaper Association yearly conference, I think it is, and it's here in San Francisco.
Most of the vendors are homeless. We have one woman vendor who would be homeless but manages to keep herself in a shared apartment by this means. San Diego is a city with a warm climate and cold hearts, and it's fairly difficult going for our vendors, but this one woman is very good at reaching people. Deborah.
I've often heard about references to San Diego as a place with a lot of military presence, and also with some pretty police that are really intense, I think, or maybe I'm getting that messed up with the military.
This used to be where chief petty officers wanted to go after they died, but that's only part of it. The overall gentrification mania that's encouraged by the state and the local governments throughout California is probably the main influence there. We used to have some poor areas, barrios. Now that they're being taken over by yuppies, and major stories in the last two issues have been about efforts by people in Sherman Heights to organize, because they're losing their neighbors. The house down the street is bought by someone else. Now it doesn't rent for $400; it rents for over $1,000, The neighborhood is much better, but the people who live there don't get to enjoy better conditions. They not only can't live in the old neighborhood anymore, but there's no neighborhood left to move to.
Mm-hmm. So is that really increasing the people on the street? I mean, people who just can't afford to pay their rent, obviously.
What's happening are conditions like families doubling up. I hear stories from social workers in this field talking about 17 people in a one-bedroom apartment. And I am afraid that we're close to a critical point where it will make a major difference in numbers of people on the street. Nonprofit charities have seen this in their shelters, and the numbers of families with children coming in for help and finding that there is no help, that housing referrals have no place to refer them to. And after that, they go out of sight. I don't know how many are out there. I don't know where they're hiding, but I know that the police position on this sort of thing is: if we don't see you, we won't arrest you. Mm-hmm. If we see you here with your kids again, we're going to call the county. Mm-hmm. That means that the problem is hidden, and I don't know myself how big it is. Or how fast, it may be on the point of growing to the point where it can't be hidden anymore.
Yeah, I know that the percentage of homelessness is huge among families, and of course most in the out of sight phrase you just used is really an important one, because that's not what people see, and people who don't take a special interest in this subject are just totally shocked and non-believing of this fact, I think, when they say, "Well, where are they? How come we don't see them?"
Yeah, well, if appearing in public meant that the county was going to take your children, you might be hard to find. It's
So a lot of people, I know that oftentimes the people are sitting, waiting, looking like they're waiting for the bus, really have nowhere else to go. I mean, I just kind of pay attention. But even at that, I don't really get a sense of it, even though I see the statistics, which it must be such a horrendous way for a child or for anybody, but particularly a child, to have to just have that experience, actually, however you slice it, you know, whether it's being in a shelter, being on the street, or just their parents having to really hustle just to survive.
Yes, and this, you know, this has been coming on for a number of years now. It started under Clinton with the so-called welfare reform, which is we've been seeing the consequences happening. The shelter providers talking about, last year we would have maybe an occasional family every month or so. Now we have about 20 every month. Mm-hmm. And that was happening years ago. There are reports out on how this has impacted the families that people have been able to locate and talk to, but there are encampments where people are basically out of sight, and I don't know how they survive.
Mm-hmm. Is there any kind of organizing going on in San Diego among people who have no homes?
It's hard to organize people with no homes. There's a group called SPIN, with a Supportive Parents Information Network, that's trying to organize people who have been basically messed over by the welfare system and the shutdown of that. But when people actually go homeless, it becomes hard to locate them. They're on the edge of survival. They need one thing, and that one thing is a place to live. And if you can't provide it, you really aren't a whole lot of use to them.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of the agencies they do other things other than provide homes.
They do everything for you but provide homes. They refer you to people who refer you to people who refer you to people. But
I'm sure it's frustrating for them sometimes too.
I'm sure it is. What I still don't understand is I think I understand that the public is afraid to believe how bad the situation is, and that's. I mean, this is something that this type of thing is more important than anything we are doing. It is a serious emergency. It's the type of thing where we would send food shipments if it were a visible earthquake or other natural disaster, and we're just letting it happen quietly under the rug because no one knows. And this is one of the reasons why we're in business. In fact, it is the reason we're in business.
And the business is Streetlight, a newspaper, the politics of poverty, homelessness, and the homelessness industry. So I want to thank you very much, Forrest Curro, editor, with his wife, Anne. Thanks for your time. My name's Sue Supriano. My next guest is Anitra Freeman, who works with Real Change, Puget Sound's newspaper of the poor and homeless, and that's out of Seattle, Washington. I remember when the indie media was starting up there, that where I was there at the time, the indie media, when the protests were against the World Trade Organization, and there was the indie media was always trying to make a lot of ties with Real Change, and I understand it's a newspaper that has a lot of respect, as do many of the homeless newspapers, I think. That's certainly how I feel about the ones here in the Bay Area, in San Francisco, and in Berkeley. And I'll repeat that we are at the North American Street Newspaper Association Conference, yearly conference, I think. And Anitra Freeman also is a director of Street Rights, which is writing workshops. And you were just telling me before we started the recorder here, Anitra, about how you became homeless during the Depression in 1995, and you were really fortunate to get some help and start taking lithium and feeling better pretty quick, and then wanting to jump back into the fray and get active. So let's just take a right there.
Yes, I was very fortunate that Seattle was one of the pilot locations of a mental health outreach program where social caseworkers did not just sit in their offices and wait for people to come to them, but went out into the community and found homeless people in need of services who would have a hard time coming in by themselves. And this program, by the way, has been tried out in several locations, been a phenomenal success, shown to drastically reduce hospital time, jail time, shelter time, and then is canceled for lack of funding. So Seattle is one of the few places where the county and the city took over supporting the program, and it's continued. But after I started taking my medications, and like I said, and started reviving, within about a week, I couldn't stand being in a sheltered, a staffed shelter anymore. And I saw a poster for self-managed shelters organized by a group called SHARE, Seattle Housing and Resource Effort, which were formerly homeless men and women themselves. And I became involved in that, and also with WEAL, Women's Housing Enhancement, Equality and Enhancement League, which is homeless and formerly homeless women working on issues of women's shelter and safety. And both organizations are very activist, advocating for social change, too. And I began looking around for other organizations that were working on the same issues in the same way, for empowering, and also became involved with Real Change.
Were you still homeless?
I was still homeless when I became involved with Real Change and became one of the editors. Now, Real Change is unique among street newspapers, even, in that the editorial committee, which decides the content of the paper, is made up entirely of homeless, formerly homeless, and low-income people. And I was on the editorial committee and was very impressed by the fire, the passion in the work that was being submitted by homeless writers. But a lot of it also needed some editorial help before it was publishable. And to make that as empowering as possible, I started a workshop. And the very first workshop, I said, I am not teacher. We're all here to help each other. Mm-hmm. And by the end of the workshop, one of the women there gave me help on one of my poems and just, was charged by that. And because of that attitude, the program has grown a lot farther than I could have ever expanded it myself. We now have 3 workshops a week. We're online. We've had radio and TV shows. We do a lot of public readings, and we do our own publications. In 1997, Real Change formally adopted street rights, and also a program for homeless artists that had started independently by homeless people themselves called Street Life. And a couple of years, and started supporting those programs, which also helped them expand. And a couple of years later, I had brought in so many people to use the computers that Real Change started a computer workshop and classes. And I also teach desktop publishing there in Word. And then recently Real Change started First Things First, which is a political activist, you know, a grassroots political activist movement to, as Tim Harris, the publisher, says, get more people enlisted so that you don't see the same 40 faces at every demonstration. Get more people working on homeless issues. And in a few months ago, we launched an Initiative 71 to get on this coming November ballot to require Seattle to build another 400, at least another 400 shelter beds and increase support services by 20%. So Real Change is very active, and I'm very, very proud to be a part of it.
Well, that's wonderful. That's definitely really good. I mean, what's not so wonderful is that there's any homelessness at all. And this is a little kind of backwards of how I usually do interviews. Usually we start with the bad news and end up with the good news. But since you are a woman and we are having a chance to talk here, I would like you to speak, Anitra Freeman, if you would, a little bit about the special issues that women, homeless women, run into, because I know it's not fun to be homeless no matter what. And I have the impression that, well, as in a lot of things, it's even harder, obviously, when you're a woman in such a vulnerable situation.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and women are largely the invisible homeless, women and children. We don't fit the stereotype of homelessness, for one thing. And homeless women hide more.
You say you don't fit the stereotype, but even though the fact is that just as many women are probably more women than men.
Well, just about everybody I know in the homeless community estimates that about a third of the homeless people they know are women, and that seems to check out with the perception of the National Coalition for Homelessness and other organizations. That's about a third of the people out there are single women. So then you count married women and you know, girl children, and it's much more than that. As I said, women tend to hide because of the vulnerability. You don't want people to know that you're homeless. You don't want to be seen during the day or the night. You tend to be in the shadows. And a lot of people may not recognize the nicely dressed, nicely groomed woman next to them at the bus stop or in the office is actually sleeping in her car or in a homeless shelter, because there's a great deal of shame attached to being poor and being homeless. And there are a number of people out there passing, you know, trying to still pass for middle class, as if, you know, it would be their shame if it was known that they're homeless.
And maybe they are middle class,
Lot of them are. More and more of the people in the middle class are sliding down into homelessness as the financial situation gets tighter and tighter. The prices of everything in Seattle, including housing, are going up and up and up, just like everywhere else. Low-income housing is being destroyed, and upper-income housing is being built. So the prices of everything keeps going up. Wages don't go up that fast. So more and more people who thought they were real comfortable a few years ago are now finding themselves at risk of being homeless or actually homeless. Mm-hmm. And it's becoming a more high-profile issue. Seattle, on the one hand, Seattle does build more affordable housing than most other cities, provide more shelter and services for the homeless, for homeless people than most other cities, and that is appalling. That's appalling because, you know, it's only, even in Seattle, it's only a fraction of what's actually needed. And the amount of money that's actually spent on affordable housing and on services for homeless people is a tenth of what is spent on the most recent sports stadium. So the priorities have to change all over the country. And that's one thing that the whole street newspaper movement is about, is changing those priorities. And one of the things that's happening in Seattle right now is a group called, is back in March 31st of last year, 2000, Cher and Wheel started a tent city. And it's continued in operation ever since, continuous operation ever since, although it has to move quite frequently because it's under a lot of pressure from the city of Seattle, which officially considers it illegal.
How many people are living there, more or less?
100 people. And again, a large number, you know, there are single women and there are a large number of couples because there are no facilities for homeless couples without children. Homeless families are often broken up in traditional shelters. 90% of the people at Tent City work because traditional shelters, the hours often aren't conducive to working, especially if you're working an odd shift. And Tent City, you can leave your belongings behind and come back, and they're still there. It's 24-hour security. And because we move from place to place and are hosted by churches, it's built up a lot of community support and a lot of awareness. It's really raised the profile. That's one of the exciting things that's happening. A lot of the women, we were talking again about women, every woman I talk to says she feels safer out at Tent City than she did in the shelters. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them choose, you know, prefer to stay at Tent City than in traditional shelters, which is another thing that's pretty appalling.
Right, it sure is. Well, we don't have much time left here. I just wanted to comment, and maybe you can comment, and then we have to bring this to a close, that indeed I understand a lot of the people living on the streets do have jobs. There's this whole thing, well, get a job, you know. But so would you, you just said 90% of the people at Tent City have are working at jobs. You want to say something more about that?
A recent study showed that there is no city in the United States where somebody making minimum wage can afford a market rate apartment. It can't be done. So we've got to do something to change that situation, or we're going to just have more and more homelessness. The situation needs to be fixed, not the people.
Well, that's a good note on which to end, which we got to do. So I want to thank you, Anitra Freeman. You want to give a contact for Real Change or for yourself?
Yes. Well, the easiest way is by email, rchange, rchange, at speakeasy.org. Our phone number is 206-441-3247.
Okay. Thanks so much, Anitra Freeman from Real Change, the newspaper of the poor and homeless in Seattle, Washington. And my name's Sue Supriano. Thanks for listening.